Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Oh, the shape that will get. You get all the fans down.
Can we not?
It's a fact. I love playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything, religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
And you're very welcome along to this week's Team 33. Endicall here with you for the next hour or so. Coming up on this evening's show, you might have heard of Manchester United, but you may not have heard of FC United of Manchester, a club that broke away made of disillusioned fans who were angry at the Glazers taking over Manchester United. And they decided, you know what, we're going to go and found our own club. And that they did. And now they have a stadium that's worth $6 million. They're playing in the seventh tier of English football and they're loving life. So I'm going to be chatting to their community liaison officer, Vinnie Thompson, about the foundation of the club and why they broke away from Manchester United. Before that, though, Colin Buig is on the line with me now because we are chatting all things Sunday League football. Before I did ask, I sent out a tweet earlier on to see if anybody had any Sunday League football that just defined, you know, what Sunday League football actually is. Got plenty of them. A lot of them I actually can't read out in air, though, which kind of sums up where we're at. Colin, firstly, give us some background of your Sunday League experience. Where did you play? How many clubs did you play? I know you don't play anymore because of your toe, but...
My toe?
Did you not break your toe?
Ankle.
Just
for the record, ankle. It's true. It's a really non-contact sport. How many clubs did I play for? It's a good question. I was with one club for like 10 or 15 years and then joined another for about 5 years. And then I moved out of Cork. So I was pretty much a two-club man. I played like a few matches like illegally with a few teams, you know, as you do throughout the years. But like I had two primary clubs.
So you have a big barn out of hair now. Were you a mercurial player that got kicked around, or what kind of player were you?
I used to be like all energy and just run up and down all day long, right? And then I went through the glass door, that Roy Keane story, and then I just came out the other side as like a player who didn't run around that much and just would ask for the ball to feet as opposed to ahead of him. That's generally how you describe it. Now, that's for better and very much for worse. That's how I would describe myself. How about you? I think you're a bit of a...
Well, the manager seems to think I'm a pacey winger, but I have little pace. And
really? You look surprised by that.
Well, my pace has gone up and down. I used to be very fast when I was younger. I did start off in schoolboy football as a pacey winger, but I was very small. And then I, you know, the usual 17, 16-year-old putting on a little bit too much weight with the bad eating and bad drinking. So I moved into central midfield and became a bit of a commander in there. And now I'm back out onto the wing because I've lost that weight and got a little bit of pace back. So I don't know how I would describe myself. I'd be consistent in any position you put me in.
I can't imagine you with weight on. Was this like the before picture and the before and after of a documentary? What are we talking here?
We're not talking extremes. Like I wasn't a big man, but I would have been about 2 stone heavier than I am right now.
No way.
Yeah, big chubby face. I had 2 chins. That's so. In college, it was very much a college thing, you know.
When you
put on the college stone, where you drink too much in the first year or so, and then you give up sports, and then all that there carry on. But I got back into it, and I'm back out in the wing, loving life for Drumcondra AFC.
Yeah, I see them. They tweet you every so often. Are you the most famous member of Drumcondra AFC?
Oh, I don't know if I would define myself as famous in any sense of the word. No, I wouldn't say so. There's bound to be someone else in the team that is doing something. You know, these people who are actually secretly working for a very big company, and they don't actually know. There's a guy playing for our team, but it took us about a year and a half to figure out what he actually did.
Yeah,
because he drove around in a brand new Range Rover and had really flashy clothes, and we were like, "What does this guy do?" It turns out he owns his own company. Like he's like a proper CEO, and none of us knew. Like a lot of us had a lot of sketchy ideas in our head of what he actually did, but it turned out it was actually all above board and all legal. So, you know, you get all those ringers. So we decided we're going to talk about some Sunday League football because, you know, why not? So I believe you have a couple of stories for me. I'll start you off. I'll let you go first. I have a couple of stories from my days as well, and a couple of stories that have been sent in to me by other people.
Yeah, well, it's the best part of Sunday League football or youth football. So don't mind like talking about how good you are, how good you weren't. Like, it's really the stories that are the fun parts. Like, I remember making my debut for this pretty good team in Cork. Now, we both agreed that we wouldn't name teams or players here, so I'll edit out those specific mentions. But I played for a half decent team in Cork, made my debut in my early 20s now when this happened, and we were playing a side in the league, and we showed up at their place and they had a lovely pitch, and we saw them warming up, and they had all their official club tops on when they were warming up, like you would see like before a Premier League game on Super Sunday. They all had their professional looking zip-up tops on, and they were engaging in very sophisticated drills before the match. Meanwhile, we showed up in like separate cars in our own individual personal clothes, quickly realized that we only had 12 players, none of which were a goalkeeper. And it was one of those ones where, like, I only joined the team because I had like a friend on the team. I didn't really know anybody else. And I think I had trained with them like two or three times max to that point. So I didn't really know what to expect. And I didn't know who the keeper was, but the word got around in the dressing room: where's the keeper? He's not showing up. His usual thing where you text him and you call him, but there was no answer. So we went out to warm up in the pitch. And at the very last minute, the decision was one of the lads' dads, who I'd say, like, to put it generously, was in his mid-50s. And he showed up in someone else's car as the passenger because he was very much hungover. And he was wearing a hoodie, tracksuit pants, runners, had his phone in his pocket, and he went in goal. And we won 3-0.
That's a job. I was half expecting you to go on net there, because that is a very common thing where you just join a team, goalkeeper isn't quite there, and you're asked to do a job in nets for your first game. And it's happened to me before. I do remember my debut, and it's not quite as bad as that, but I'll go into the story that I have that's actually better than my debut, because this is a highly uninteresting story. But I was 15, made my debut for the local team, because I'd switched there was two teams essentially. There was the local team that played in Ulster Senior League, and then there was a Saturday League team, and I wasn't getting much game time for the Ulster Senior League team, so I moved to the Saturday League team, made my debut at 15, and a corner came in. We were defending a corner. Corner came in, headed away, comes to me at the edge of our own box, and I flicked it through the oncoming defender's legs, like kind of, you know, like a back heel.
Yeah.
Back heeled it, and then did a around the world, around another defender, and then got absolutely nailed by the third defender. And I got up, I didn't get a free. And then I got up, I said to the referee, I was like, what the hell was that? He came absolutely through me. He was like, you're playing senior football now, boy.
Hold on, you did it around the world.
Well, I don't know if that's the right term. Do you know the one where you twirl?
Oh, the Zidane turn.
Is that the Zidane turn?
Yeah, because sure. Around the world is just like a stationary position where you do it at flick.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not that. It was the one where you twirl.
Yeah, that's the Zidane turn.
And I was just like, just because it's senior football doesn't mean that's not a foul. I mean, like, it was crazy stuff. But the story that I actually remember to this day is, again, 16-year-old me playing for the senior team. And there was a guy on our team, and I won't name him, but he loved a drink. And often he would never turn up because he was going to watch the football, and he'd go to the pub instead of going to the game. And we turned up one day and the pub's only over the road. Like, it's 30 seconds over the road from their football pitch. And we realized that we only had 10 players. And we knew he was in the pub, so we were like, we'll just go over and get him. Somebody went over, collected him, took him over. He was about 4 or 5 pints deep at this stage. It would have been like a 3 o'clock kickoff. So he came onto the pitch smoking a fag before the kickoff and played left back. And he scored 2 goals and was man of the match. And that sounds made up, but it's not.
No, I completely believe it. They're the best stories. There's so many of them that you hear of these, like, oh, this guy was absolutely class, but he loved the pint. Mm. And, you know, it's one of those stories like, oh, he would have played in the Premier League if he minded himself. He definitely would. And now, like, no one knows what he does, like, or no one knows where he is. He's one of these mysterious types.
I saw Chris Wilder talking about this, and it was really interesting because he was speaking about Jamie Vardy, and Chris Wilder, obviously a proper English bloke, he says he often goes down to the pub to watch a football match, and people talked to him and said, like, Jamie Vardy came up, and people said, oh yeah, I would have done the same, but, you know, the knee. And Chris Wilder turns and he's like, and I just turn to them and say, well, you know what? You didn't.
Yeah.
You didn't and you wouldn't. If you would have done it, you would have done it. And there's so many people that, you know, like, talk about it and you know they were never good enough, but they always believed. Which brings me to the ringers, because there are in a league where you can sign players on multiple occasions and they come and go as they please. Dublin opened my eyes to the amount of ringers that you can end up on your team. And I got sent in this story by a friend of mine who plays for a club in Dublin, not to be named. And he said, a guy signed for our team. He was apparently Brazilian, but we would soon learn that we didn't know what was real and what wasn't about him. The stories he told from his background differed from person to person. One story was that he was adopted by Navajo parents, but ran away from them because they didn't agree with his lifestyle. Another one was that he was going out with a Serie A footballer and had actually played underage Serie A himself. But that was contradicted by the story of him playing underage football for Shane Long at Southampton, despite being 8 years younger than him, and the fact that Shane Long didn't actually come through the Southampton Academy. What we did know about this Brazilian lad, though, was that he wore Crocs, he tied his hair up using a shoelace, and he was one of the best players that we signed in years.
I love it. Like, it's like, it's the most interesting element of any level of football, professional or otherwise, is these mysteriously talented people. Like, they don't even belong in real life.
No, like, they don't. They're
like Kramer from Seinfeld. They're like sitcom characters.
Yeah, I can vouch for that person. He was phenomenal. Yeah. Far too good for the league that he was playing in.
Yeah.
Another one we were sent in was, it's titled Scuba Steve. So we had a goalkeeper called Scuba Steve who played in nets. He got the name Scuba Steve because he wore goggles and he would dive for absolutely every single ball, no matter where it was going in the net. He stopped turning up when he lost his goggles, but it turned out he didn't lose his goggles. The manager had stolen them and hidden them because he was absolutely useless.
That's the other side.
It's a bit harsh.
Like, I've seen fellas who just, like, they can't throw the ball in a throw-in to the point where the ref's like, you're going to have to change the throw-in taker because we can't continue with this person taking a throw-in. But it, like, I love the Sunday League football. Like, it just seems to attract the best characters, like the lunacy of the world. So I remember there was one guy we had on the sideline who he was the most friendly and charming person. And then the whistle would blow for the start of the match. And he would just turn into this crazed lunatic who would not leave the referee alone. And he wasn't playing in one particular match. Same story, like, straight away the game starts, he lays into the ref. So our manager sends him over to the other side, which, you go away, like, you're annoying the rest of us, go away. So then he walked over to the other side of the pitch and he actually met a fella that he knew. So he went over there and started talking to him. But the thing is, like, this guy was so sound. So he was just asking your man, like, oh, how are you? Yeah, you're doing well. Oh, yeah. And he would know everything about this person, like, and make them feel like he really wants to chat to him. And then the ref would make this decision and your man would go crazy. And he would repeatedly do this. And then the ref says to the opposition's bench, lads, you're going to have to get rid of him. or else something's going to happen. And they're like, we don't even know who he is. It's like, the ref's like, here, player, go over there with you. Yeah. Go over. And he goes into the car park and screams from the car park in his car. It's about like, that's the beautiful thing. You can't stop it.
Yeah, no, see, that's the thing about Sunday League, because it's often played in park pitches,
yeah.
Right?
What are you going to do?
We were playing against a team last season, and they got a man sent off, and then he was still shouting at the ref when he was off the pitch, and the ref sent the manager off as well because he was shouting, and the manager was just like, where do you want me to go? this isn't a stadium. Like, this is a public park. Like, do you want me to go over to the other pitch over there? And the ref was like, I don't care where you go, just go away from this pitch.
That's fantastic.
And like, obviously it's not right that referees get as much abuse as they do.
I don't know how they do it, because I know they don't get much money for it. No. So I don't know. But I also don't know how managers organize the teams, because they get nothing for it. Like, these people just want the distraction in life, from life.
No, they do great work, in fairness to them. And I often think, especially now, I don't want to go into COVID too much, but especially during COVID, like, a lot of the talk was about the GAA and how we must get the GAA back on. People rely on it, and volunteers, you know, they do great work. Yeah. And football, amateur football in Ireland, was completely overlooked in this sense. Like, nobody was talking about whether or not we were allowed to play in the Leinster Senior League or not. And I mean, like, I personally made a choice that I'm not going to train and I'm not going to play regardless until this has died down. But there are a lot of people who want to play football, and they're not being talked about at all.
Mm. I remember you pointed that out at the start of COVID, all right? And I know it's reflected across the country, because I'm still in the football WhatsApp group from the last team I played with in Cork. And that's all that the WhatsApp says, like, when are we going to be able to train? When's the next match? And then people start losing interest as a result. You know, they start doing other things, like, it's,
yeah,
it is danger to it.
I think there's a bigger turnover in football as there than GAA, and like, it's easier to give up for people, I think. Outside of the serious stuff, let's get back to the story. Yeah. So I do have two stories left of my own. So I actually forgot about these. But so we have a player called Des Kelly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being Dublin, I'm playing in a Dublin league, Des Kelly Interiors. Every time he would do anything, so the Herald reports on it, or on the UCFL games, and we used to play in the UCFL. And any time Des did anything, it would be the headline. And they would always make a joke. So if he set up a goal, it wouldn't be the goal that would make it. It would be something like, Des Kelly rolled the carpet out for the striker. Like, there would always be a pun about it. And it was just so unfortunate. Another one is two seasons ago, we were still playing UCFL football, United Churches League, and we're playing Leinster Junior League, FAI Junior Cup, sorry, one step above the FAI Junior Cup, because we're playing outside of Dublin, and we're the only team in the UCFL left playing in this tournament, which was quite impressive, because there were teams above us. There was like three divisions above us, and we were the only ones still playing. So we got drawn against Ferrybank in Waterford, away to their game. Massive club in Waterford. Brilliant facilities.
Yeah,
go down to them. And, you know, naturally it was a tough fixture. They beat us 2-0 or 2-1 on the day. But Ferrybank had said to us, you know, you're travelling down to us, we'll feed you before you head up back to Dublin. And we were like, you know, fair play to you, so that's very sound. And we were all expecting, like, maybe like GAA style, rolling out the sandwiches after the game, and soup, or like a roast carvery or something. And after the game, we go into the dressing room, and we ask our manager, where are we going to eat? And he was like, oh, we're going to a Chinese pub. We all kind of looked at him, and our manager would be well known for telling a few fibs. So we're like, all right, where are we actually going? He was like, I told you, it's a Chinese pub. So we hop on the bus, and all of us are still convinced we're going to end up at an Irish pub with a carvery. Sure enough, it was actually a pub owned by a Chinese family who ran a Chinese inside it, and we were all served up 4-1s on plates while we got to watch the Man City Arsenal game, which was on the same day.
Unbelievable.
Feed a pint, back up on the bus. Great night's crack.
Would you recommend that to all football teams having
it was brilliant. Like, it was it was proper Sunday League football. It was great crack.
Yeah.
Like, you all that, I think that's what I miss the most about, you know, sport, is the taking part. It's the crack that you have on the bus on the way to games, and then you might head out for a few, like Sunday league especially, you head out for a few pints if you're playing on a Saturday, you know.
Yeah.
With the lads, you go out and you watch the 3 o'clock, half five kickoffs, and then you might end up out. Like it's just great crack, like, you know.
It's just seeing the faces then of the players the next morning when you have to go to the match, and it's like lads trying to down Lucozade as quickly as possible and just slapping themselves in the face like 10 seconds before the ref starts the match. And then as soon as the match starts, it's ultra competitive. You snap out of it and then you snap back into it afterwards. I was sent some great ones there when I did the call out during the week. One fella sent me this one. I'm going to keep it anonymous as much as I can. So obviously all these stories are from adulthood, actually. I didn't get any kids' stories. It was just all like Sunday league as opposed to youth football. So this is one, and this is all a quote, obviously. I showed up to a game for my team half-cut from the night before. One of the lads was driving and I was asleep the whole way out to the match, which was a bit of a drive. I got dropped due to the stink of booze off me. We were 3-0 up with 30 minutes to go. So I come on to see out, in inverted commas, the game. The opposition keeper kicks a high ball down on top of me at centre half. The ball moves in the wind and is dropping in front of me. I decided the best thing to do is to do a diving header to clear the pitch. I completely miss the ball while in mid-flight. It hits the ground and then bounces off my face. They get the ball and score. 3-1, mortified. Then they play a through ball in, and in my haste to make up for the previous mishap, I absolutely annihilate the centre forward. Penalty, 3-2. I'm in the horrors now from the hangover and from my performance, which isn't helping matters. I'm pretty sure I then misplaced the pass, which resulted in a goal not long after, 3-3. I've been on the pitch for 11 minutes. I ended up handing all momentum to the opposition, and they beat us 4-3 in the end. That was 10 years ago, and I'm still reminded about it to this day.
Love it. Right.
I just love that. 11 minutes, 3 goals. It's like Spurs against West Ham recently.
At one point in time, I was convinced that I played better hungover.
I could never do it. Like, I mean, that would be my way to convince lads the night before. I was like, oh, come on, we'll go out with George Bestage. And they'd be fine. Like, but then I couldn't. I just couldn't see properly the next day. I couldn't actually see.
Yeah, well, I don't do it anymore. Because we play on a Saturday, so if I were to have a few drinks, it would be a few, because I can't do it anymore. When I was 19 to 23, I could just do whatever and
peak drinking age,
be absolutely fine. But now I can't do it.
There's always one fella on every team who never drank and was incredibly fit, and you'd be so jealous of him the day of the match then. But yeah, like I quickly stopped doing that the night before games, the day before games, because it was pointless me playing the next day.
Yeah.
It was literally useless, like.
Well, the further up you go in the divisions, the sooner you realise you can't afford to be hungover for the game.
Like, you know that feeling when, it's usually a wide as well, it's the opposition fullback or winger, and they're just whizzing by you, and you're like, oh, I shouldn't be playing. I'm not fit enough here to play this game. Yeah, there is a certain level where you can do what you want. Like, I know a guy who plays up here, who's from Cork but lives in Dublin, and he plays for a team and they just play matches, they don't train. And he said it's ideal. You just rock up. You don't even know the players that well. And they won the league recently because they had enough good players to win the league. But that's the beauty of it. Like, it's the most accessible sport in the world. So that's these great stories. Like, there's no niche to it. You can play. And there's a level for everybody.
Yeah, no matter where in the world you go, if you move to a different city, you will find a team that's at your level.
Easily.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But I think that's what I miss most. The crack of it, the training, which I actually don't get to do enough of because I work in the evening times. But the matches are like ultra competitive for the standard. No matter what standard you go to, there are people who are putting their life on the line to win these games.
I know. Go on.
What's the worst pitch you've ever played on?
Oh, there was a pitch in West Cork. We showed up and there was a dead sheep on it.
Oh.
So we had to move this. And we were actually quite young, like, and we had to collectively move the sheep off it. And there was like such a slope on the pitch that it was equivalent to a handbrake start in a driving test. You know, if you put the ball down, it would roll. It would continue to roll. And there were divots everywhere. So there was a distinct advantage playing downhill. So if you won the toss, you could try and score as many goals as possible in the first half. And then Kevin Keegan, management style, just outscore the opposition the first half and hold forth in the second. Because I played there a few times and that pitch was never improved throughout the years.
Yeah, it's always a tough choice that when either there's a strong wind or there's a slope. Is do you try score as many goals as possible and then batten down the hatches in the second half, or do you go for the defensive mode in the first half and then all guns blazing second half? I tend to the all guns blazing from the start because you have more energy and you can fly past the opposition. You can put the game dead before it actually gets to halftime. The worst pitch that I ever played on was a couple of years ago in Dublin in a park pitch, and I'm not really sure. I can't remember who it was against or who plays there, but the pitch was massive. And I mean, I'm not talking like just a naturally big pitch. I'm talking this pitch was as big and as wide as a GAA pitch. You couldn't kick the ball far enough to get it across to the other pitch. It was at least a 2 to 3 pass to get it to the other side of the pitch. It was unbelievably big. Like, I can't over-exaggerate how big this pitch was.
Go on. I hate big pitches. I just hate them. Like, the smaller the pitch, the better. Just give me as small as possible. Because there's another pitch in Cork where you could easily hit a goal kick from one goal to the other, the keeper, easily. But then there's some... See, that's the other brilliant thing about it is that there are so many pitches around Ireland that have no right to be pitches, but they're just used as a football pitch because it's the only room that town or village has. So they're like, there's your football pitch, like the one that I mentioned a while ago. That's the I remember looking at the fixture list and there's some pitches that just be a shiver up your spine, like, oh no, not that pitch, and you're thinking about it all week. There's some, like, the pitch has definitely improved the older I got. But I remember, I would say football now for young people is so much better suited to developing their skills, because I remember playing under nines for like a pretty decent team, but like it was under nines, but it was decent for that age group. And they made us play in like the adult pitches and we were playing in adult goals. So all you would have to do is hit the ball either side of the goalkeeper or just a bit higher than him.
Yeah, I don't think they play full pitch anymore.
No, they don't. Cause no. I started off as a goalkeeper. Yeah,
under 12s was the first time we played full pitch, and it was full pitch from then on. But I don't think even up until I think it's under 16s now is the first time you play full pitch.
Yeah, it would be. And because like what happens is you don't get enough of the ball. You might see the ball 5 or 6 times in the whole match because you're too small for the pitch. Because I started off as a goalkeeper, obsessed to Peter Schmeichel, and got every United goalkeeping kit for a few years in the late 90s, early 2000s. And there's a picture of me in goal, age 9, wearing like a full Schmeichel kit, because you were allowed to wear whatever kit you wanted in official matches as a goalkeeper. And I was in the adult size goals and I looked like an ant. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, and it was because we had a good team, so there was no shots in us. But you'd rung up scores like 15, 16 nil because the heads would drop.
Yeah.
And then the opposition would just run in and just fire in the goals. And then you'd get fellas who, as a result of scoring 50 goals a season, would get trials over in England. But sure, they'd be back after a week because like they'd play proper football over there and play in smaller pitches. So you get overdeveloped young fellas who get a shot abroad because like the statistics read incredibly well, but they're completely misleading. I don't think that happens anymore.
Speaking of Manchester United, I know you're a Manchester United fan, and what have you heard of FC United of Manchester, or what are your opinions of the Glazers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit heartbreaking, like, even to get behind United when they're doing well. Like, at the time of talking, they're doing quite well in the last two games after the Spurs game. And you obviously want them to do well as a fan, but then you're thinking, well, the better they do in these games, the longer the Glazers will stay on and will never really develop the team properly or I would say hire an appropriate manager, as well as Solskjaer is doing. I think we can do better, like, in terms of a manager. So, and you know, the whole, like, they do, Glazers do provide money for transfers, I do get that, but they're also, the club is in huge debt. And, you know, I would say it's pretty obvious that the best interest of the club is earned at heart, like, with the Glazers. So you ideally would want, owners who have United's interests at their hearts primarily. But I don't, like, the longer or the more time that goes on, the less likely that's going to happen. So we're kind of stuck with them.
Yeah. I think they have been disastrous for United. It's like, I mean, there was a point in time where United, like, genuinely worried about going out of business because of the amount of debt that they had built up. And I think they, United will struggle to keep developing as a club. Commercially, they'll be brilliant. As a business, they are top of the crops. Top of the pops. Well, top of the crops either. But as a football club. And I think when they took football club off the badge, that's when things started changing. That's when the interests of the football club started changing. And I do think they eventually, United will need new owners before they can get back to the top. But that's what happened at Liverpool. What needs to happen at United.
Yeah, I went to the Web Summit a couple of years ago in Lisbon, and Richard Arnold did a speech. And he was just, like, obviously very senior at Man United. And all he was talking about was their social media presence and how that's increasing, which is good. I mean, they are commercially brilliant and more than viable. But, you know, obviously fans are just interested in the football. So, you know, they would argue that they're trying to do both and make United this powerhouse business, which it already was anyway, but they're trying to improve that again. And they have done that off the pitch, and United are the most followed team around. Like, but it's just, there's no real sign of long-term progression. And actually, like, the Glazers have been in charge for 15 years, and it was really only because of the genius of Alex Ferguson that from 2005 to 13, United were winning all around them. It was because of his genius. I mean, that last title in 2012-13 was the most average United team that won the league, but it was because of Ferguson and signing Robin van Persie and building the team around him. But since then, the last 7 years have been a monumental struggle, and it's probably what the club deserves, to be honest, because of the way it's run.
Yeah, they had no right to win that title. They also, the social media thing is still continuing to this day, because I saw when they were releasing their annual report yesterday, one of the chiefs, I can't remember who it was, said that they were the most followed club on the Chinese version of the internet, or Chinese version of Facebook.
Weibo.
And again, that's like that's what they're concentrating on, instead of the fact that they're struggling on the pitch.
No, but if that's your job, fair enough. That's fine. I have no problem with that. It's just that, you know, there's an absence of a director of football. And I think David Gill was just as much of a loss as Ferguson was.
Yeah, I think in general, football has lost a bit of its soul, and we will continue to lament that for years to come, including if we get this European Premier League, which just seems to be the next development of what the Premier League was in the 90s. And I have lost the connection with the club. And the FC United of Manchester, I'm going to be chatting to Vinnie Thompson after the break about it. The club came from the fact that the Glazers took it over and they mortgaged the club, and they took away the fan aspect of it and just turned it into a business. That's sort of where it's going.
Yeah, but they don't care about that, and they also know they're going to have enough fans that remain.
Yeah, globally they will have enough fans to keep the ship going. So that's coming up after the break. Colm, thanks for your Sunday League stories.
Loved it. Cheers, Enda.
We'll take a quick break.
Type of midfield is Herrera. He's not box to box. He's not defensive. He can't do a f***ing killer pass. Why is he on the f***ing pitch for? For what? See him come here and f***ing boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and f***ing boss us. Rojo, what is he? What was his tactics? As soon as you get Rojo, just f***ing do it. We're not f***ing Stoke. We're Man f***ing United here. Watch. That was diabolical, that. Martial is playing against a f***ing centre midfielder in doubt. Take the f***ing on. Take him on and f***ing do it. We're Man f***ing United here. That was diabolical, that.
So I'm delighted to be joined by FC United of Manchester's community liaison, Vinnie Thompson. Vinnie, thanks for joining me today.
No problem at all. No problem at all.
So firstly, if anybody hasn't heard of FC United of Manchester, I know a lot of people know Manchester United. Where did the club come from? Who are you? What league do you play in? And can you just give me a bit of background on the club itself?
Yeah. So to use what's becoming a bit of a cliche, we were formed by disillusioned, disenfranchised United fans. We'll all Reds. We'll always be Reds. You cut us, we'll be red, white and black. But we just don't play to the Glazer model. So, you know, we probably were politicised when we repelled the Murdoch takeover with the Sky thing. And then when the Glazers came, we did everything we could, both sides of the law, to repel them. And then that didn't work. Money didn't talk, it screams. So the only alternative then was to go with Plan B, which was, why don't we form a United Football Club for United fans? So it's a broad church now. It's not just Reds. It's everybody, you know, from people are priced out of the game, lots of different areas.
So what was it specifically about the Glazer takeover that the founders of the club were against?
The pricing out. Most people now, they're not priced out by, they're not excluded from the game by race, colour, creed, or even sexuality. They're excluded by affordability. They can't afford the Prem. Working class families, it's 100 nicker to get into a ground. So, you know, that's not right. That can't be right. So, and to be fair, a lot of us were fed up with the Prem, fed up with Sky, the moving of the times, asking you to travel to Southampton on a Monday, which is 2 days off work. You know, lots of things, really.
And we're sort of seeing that price tag again with the pay-per-view game for the Newcastle game on Saturday, and now this new invention of the European Premier League, which is probably going to be another version of what the Premier League became. It's just the super clubs kind of trying to get more and more money as much as possible. So I suppose that would be the general idea of where FC United of Manchester came from as well.
Yeah. The nucleus of us were probably fed up with the modern game, fed up with the way the game had changed. And, you know, Monday night football and bloody Sunday afternoon and Saturday night and so forth, you know, that's football's 3 o'clock on a Saturday. In terms of the Glazers, my club went from the richest club in the world to $600 million in debt overnight. They didn't buy my club. The Glazers didn't buy my club. They just mortgaged my club. So I don't mind paying my mortgage. What bollocks if I'm paying theirs for them?
Mm. And Manchester is obviously quite a working class city, and it still is to this day, and it sort of holds itself in those working class ethos. Did you find a lot of fans were in the same boat and came along with you, or was there a bit of friction there of the hardcore fans as well, or how many fans actually came in the first place, do you know?
Well, initially, like, there's a massive wave of revulsion about the Glazer takeover, you know, which was a hostile takeover. It was just simply carpetbagging, really. And then so lots of people were on side, but it takes a lot of balls to leave something you've loved all your life. You know, you can have three wives, but you can only have one football club. So some people struggle with that. And then for some, you know, the non-league scene isn't for them. You know, they, after a while, they miss the razzmatazz of the Premiership, etc. For us, it's like, I'm a working-class guy. I never thought I'd own a football club.
Yeah. And were you part of one of the original people that left and formed this club?
Yeah, there was various committees and steering groups. There were 17 people originally, and then that evolved into splinter steering groups for different areas of how we would form. And then, you know, there's more to it than just forming a football club and saying you've got to be a football club. There's logistics, there's legalities, there's, you know, what there's copyrights on your shirt. There's all sorts of things that, you know, we had to get people in who got skill in those areas, not pay them, people who believed in what we were doing, who would do those things for us.
So obviously, if you look at FC United of Manchester's gear, the crest is very similar to the original United crest, and the name itself is very similar, and the colours are the same. Was there much pushback from actual Manchester United when you were forming this club?
No, not really. No, they didn't think, you know, one famous United player, an older United player, said, you know, in an interview on telly, and said, like, I'll all be old for Christmas. You know, it'll just fizzle out. So probably about 2,000 of our fans send him a Christmas card every Christmas. So behind his doorstep is loads of cards saying, guess what, Alan, we're still here.
So what has been the biggest challenge so far in the last 15 years of this club, getting it off from the ground zero to what it is now? Because I do want to touch on what you actually are now, which is actually really impressive, because I had a look at your stadium as well, and it's phenomenal facilities for a club of that size. So what's been the biggest challenge so far?
Biggest challenge has been, I think, just being all things to everyone. You know, some people come on board for one reason and for another reason and another reason and another reason. And it was keeping all those people, not happy, that's not the right word, but, you know, keeping them on board. And then the building on the ground, which nearly killed us, because, you know, the building went into administration halfway through the build.
Right.
So what would have been a 5.1 build, which we'd 5.1 million, which we'd covered for, became a 6.3.
Right.
And we didn't have that other coverage. We didn't have that cushion. So, and it's fan owned. It's a testament to Vancouver Defiance. So it's every, you know, we're quite unique in the world of supporter ownership, in that we're 100% owned by the fans. So it's quite a pure model, which sometimes makes for problems associated with that, but it's worth fighting for.
And have you looked at, say, the likes of Germany, who follow a very similar model to that, for inspiration, or where are you sort of leading the charge from in that, or who does,
well, initially,
who does that sort of things?
Yeah, initially Wimbledon were great with us, and they gave us lots of very good legal advice, and then in terms of the German experience, Germany's the best place in the world to watch football. You know, Germany's great. And they have that 50 plus one rule, which is not quite adhered to by all of them, but still it's a decent model. And then to follow that lead, really, just said, was that Falke in Hamburg, they were disillusioned HSV fans, and they wanted to form their own club. So 200 of them come over when we were building the stadium, and got pissed with us and had a look at what we do and everything else, and just said, yeah, we're going to follow the stream. So they, you know, so it's kind of weird. We look to other areas like Germany and elsewhere, and yet, you know, we ended up being a role model for them.
Yeah, and what's interesting about Germany is that, you know, look, there's clubs finding the way around that 50 plus one rule, RB Leipzig being the prime example of that.
Yes,
but
yeah,
the German fans just don't put up with it. They actually, there's anger around that, and they really fight for the ethos of what football is meant to be, and football being a working class sport. So Germany is a really interesting sense in that, and also the amount of fans, like you said, coming from Europe who are now being disillusioned with modern football. There's actually quite a few fans off the Eredivisie that are starting to come over now and watch League Two football because they're disillusioned with the Eredivisie. So you can see this movement is really starting to pick up a bit.
Yeah, this isn't just a few nutters in Manchester. This is a worldwide movement of people who believe in supporter ownership, who believe in having a voice. Manchester is a city of revolution. It always has been. We've just had the thing defying Boris and his clowns this week. So it's always going to be a spirit of rebellion in this city. And the FC United is just an embodiment of some of that rebellion. So like with foreign fans coming over for United or for City, then they'll come and see us, because United or City don't very rarely play at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So if they're coming over for a Sunday game, they'll come watch us on a Saturday. If they're coming over for, you know, a tea time kickoff, then they can come up to us, leave at half time, and still make it to Old Trafford. And at the Etihad, we're only 10 minutes away. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, starting a football club, like you said, it's not a simple thing, and especially if you're going out there with the outset of it's going to be a fan-owned club and it's not going to be a commercial entity like Manchester United have become. There was a lot of friction around, was it 2016 or around that period? How do you maintain the balance between a growing club like FC United of Manchester, where you're building a stadium that's costing $6 million, and still remaining true to what the original idea of the club was?
Well, the original idea of the club, it hasn't changed really. It's supporter ownership and it's community involvement. And so some of the big boys play a lot of tokenism. You know, they visit council wards and they give out Easter eggs at Easter and a few trips on a council ward at Christmas. But we get the nitty gritty. We get into working with communities that they want their precious stars to touch. So, you know, in terms of what we said we deliver, I believe we're still delivering it. There's always going to be division. You know, not always going to be 100% behind everything you do. Mm-hmm. But this is democracy, and that's democracy in action. People are always going to fall out with one little bit of something.
You mentioned the community aspect of the club. You're doing something really great at the minute, and that's working alongside the food banks to make sure that nobody goes hungry during the COVID crisis. And I know Manchester is badly hit at the minute with COVID. How have you found that? It's a really difficult thing to do, I imagine.
Incredibly. Not that you've done it before. I've got a great network I work with domestic violence, work with dementia and Parkinson's people. We've got the only football club with allotment on its ground. I work with lots and lots of different areas of society and society's ills and problems, you know, anti-racist stuff, lots of things. Most of those schemes involve one-to-one contact. So when the pandemic started to hit, or we thought it was on its way, those would be excluded. So therefore, there'd be no social interaction. So I thought, why don't we help these people? There's lots of people shielding here who have no other support network. Why don't we become their support network? So we did outwards from the ground, but now we're right across the city and further. And then we also support about 4 of the food banks. So when I've got extra ice, I obtain and purchase perhaps 1,000 kilos of food a week.
Right.
So there's always, if I've got things in, I have 2 food banks came yesterday to the ground, and one got a load of drinks and some other foods. The other guy took like 250 loaves that just come straight from my bakery. And the stuff we give out is very, very good. It's not yellow marks up last night's on the date stickers, stuff from a supermarket. I've got manufacturers and that's not what you call people who do food, but you know, people who work in the food industry, who've supported us very well, and I buy stuff at whatever I can get it at.
Food banks are an interesting thing because it's not something we have here in Ireland, or it's definitely not something that is as common in Ireland as it would be in the UK. Have you seen a noticeable increase in people using food banks? Because I know it's a big thing that Marcus Rashford is getting into now. Well,
I got the same award that Marcus got from the Michelin for Manchester for work within communities during the pandemic, which for our little clubs are great. A great thing, you know. But you know, food banks now are kind of a way of life for some people, and it will be for the foreseeable. Our initial audience was shielded adults, people with no support system. Like, I'll give you an example. An old lady, 82, her support system would be her son, who was probably 60 or something. Mm-hmm. And he starts showing signs of COVID. So he can't do a shopping for her. He can't go and visit her. So she's at it. She's by herself.
Yeah.
So I got a referral for her. And then we took her on and fed her and looked after her. And then, you know, there's fans supporting food banks. Now it's another new movement that we're part of. So Everton have got quite a big one, and Liverpool have one. And so most people who are accessing food banks have not had to do that before. They don't know the scripts. They don't. Mm-hmm. They've never had to be in that position, you know, before. You know, and the second wave of the pandemic is the financial pandemic, where, you know, people thought they had jobs and been in their jobs years, but then with the virus, now those jobs aren't there. They're not just in hospitality, but people who do office cleaning, no one goes to offices anymore, they all work from home, mm-hmm. all sorts of different things.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a very worthy cause, because it's something that it hasn't, thankfully, food banks aren't as common in Ireland, but it's something that hasn't really become, it's something that's not really been thought about, or there's not as much action in Ireland in the sense of helping people who need it the most. So it's definitely a worthy cause that you're part of. Outside of the community aspect of the club, there's obviously the on-pitch stuff as well. Currently playing in the seventh tier of English football, if I'm right in saying. So what's the ultimate ambition for FC United of Manchester?
It's different for lots of different people. Some would like to go back as far up as the Prem. I would, for the statement it makes, not for the experience, but that'll never happen in my lifetime, because we'd never have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And some would go below the leagues right now, because, you know, they just had such a great time, you know, free from the restrictions and conventions of the Premiership, etc. You know, drinking on the terrace and, you know, all these new grounds that you'd never been to before, and these little towns, you know, great, fantastic.
Mm.
But for me, I'd like to go as far as we can.
So obviously the thing that the Premier League has is that it's able to sell the biggest teams coming up against each other. But from following the League of Ireland, I'm not sure if you've seen much League of Ireland. It's very much local teams with local players, and it really needs developed. And the quality of football wouldn't be great, but the experience is brilliant going to these games, and it's real old style football. And I've been to a couple of League Two games, League One games as well. It's very similar. It's very much what, well, I'm not young enough to remember football pre-Premier League, but it's very much what I believe the football was like. The experience of the football match is very much like that at the lower division. So is that something you've really enjoyed?
Yeah, this is real football. So, you know, for us, you know, it's all a bit of life on Mars. Like, you shut your eyes and you're back on that terrace in the Stretford End and stood with your mates as you would have been years ago. And football isn't a sitting down thing. That's the FA and the rest of them what did that. You know, having to pay through the nose, they've equated what was a working class lad's rite of passage to get his pocket money and go and buy a ticket. You know, don't buy a ticket, just go straight in the ground. You know, and it was affordable and everything else, to a night at the theatre. You know, if someone was, let's say, Coldplay, we were playing at the arena, then that might be £45. But that would be once every 2 years they tour. They're asking you to pay that every week.
Mm.
So, you know, or every second week when you're home. So it's old-style football, and it's lovely.
And as a United fan myself growing up, getting over to Manchester has become increasingly difficult because the prices for everything has gone up. It's a full-blown holiday if I want to go over and watch United play in a normal Premier League game. So it's difficult in that aspect as well for fans who, like, I know one of the issues people have is fans coming over from other countries to watch English teams play, but Ireland has always had that link with the Premier League and it always has that base, but it is becoming more difficult for the fans to get over. So that's why I would always encourage people to go watch League of Ireland football as well and appreciate what we have on this island. But before I finish up, there's been a lot of greater Manchester clubs and lower league clubs like Bury, like Macclesfield, really struggling with finances and going under and the pressures of trying to compete with the behemoths of the Premier League. How have you found, firstly, just the financial side of things staying alive and also with the pandemic hitting again, just surviving as a club?
Well, it's really hard because at the moment we can get 600 in, but the average pound is maybe 1,700 over a season. That's including big crowds, you know, the 4,000 grand, etc. So that's nowhere near enough because we sell, you know, twice as many season tickets as that. So it's a lottery who gets in. Mm-hmm. We can't. You know, you've got, God forbid you sound like David Gill here, but like, there's a second spend for everybody who comes in and you survive on some of that second spend, the beer, the pies, whatever. And obviously that's impacted. But for example, what they call the elites, which is the league above us, they come under elite status. There's a club local to us who, we're about 1,000 people down per game. And we get no support whatsoever from the FA or the government. The elite, just a club that's maybe 8 miles from our ground, who just gone up to the other in the last 2 years, gone into the league above us. They say they're 365 fans down, and we're three times that down. They get £30 a month.
Yeah,
30 grand a month. So, you know, and we get no support. So it's a very imbalanced situation. And so us and two or three other clubs will probably form a coalition to, you know, try and fight that and try and get some equality across the leagues. Because it can't be right that the further up you go, the more money you get. Those at the bottom are going to need it more than those at the top. Mm. So, you know, that's the next sort of battle for us. And then, of course, yesterday we've gone into Tier 3 lockdown. So that means that there's got to be a meal served. It was bad enough trying to set up people sat down outside because you can't serve on a terrace. They've got to be sat down on the two non-terraced areas, the flat bits of stands with tables and chairs. So now that'll be gone because we can't serve food out there. They're probably not sufficient to cover the law. So it is hard, yeah, it is hard.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for you and all the other clubs in that situation as well, because it really is the heart blood of football in England, regardless of who you actually support. So Vinny Thompson from SC United of Manchester, thanks for joining me and best of luck over the next couple of years with the club.
Yeah, thank you. Next time you're in Manchester, come over. Have a look at us.
I will.
Just give us a shout. I'll put you some tickets on. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
You know, I'm a football man. Kevin's a football man, you know. And
Joel's not. Now, sorry, I'm a football man too.
Oh! What do you wear? Are you a boxer shorts
boxers,
man?
Yeah,
you,
boxers, yeah.
Are
boxers.
You a knickers man or what are you? That's one thing my wife's never had to buy me is boxer shorts or pants because I don't wear any. Simple as that. I don't think I'm the only male out there that doesn't wear pants either. I think there's a lot of males. I know a lot of people that don't wear pants. It's no big deal. I don't know. You know, I'm a football man. I don't wear it. Hal Robson canoe. We found one here. Still don't wear pants. What do you wear? Boxers. I said, it's getting hot in here. So take off all your clothes.
Now, welcome back. So that is about all we have time for on this evening's show. So as always, if you want to listen back to that, you can find it as part of the OTB Podcast Network, which is available now in the OTB Sports app or wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Spotify as well and iTunes if you don't have the OTB Sports app. But you should get the OTB Sports app because that's where all the OTB Sports goodness is. And you can also find us, as always, on the YouTube channel as well. If you want to watch that full interview with Vinnie Thompson from FC United of Manchester, that's up there, as well as an extended version of myself and Colm chatting about our Sunday League memories as well. That's up on our YouTube as well, youtube.com/offtheball. We will be back again at the same time in the same place next week. But as always, until then, take it away, Johan.